Welcome to the Hardware Sound Podcast. In this episode, we take an in-depth look at the latest flagship motherboard from ASUS, the ROG Crosshair X780E Hero. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay. So there were a few milestones for Hardware Asylum this last month.
Oh, do tell.
Well, the first one is a motherboard review, but you know, we've done motherboard reviews a lot. I actually enjoy motherboards, but this one is based on an AMD chipset.
Wow, it's been a while since we've had an AMD on the bench.
And I had to look it up.
Okay.
So the last actual AMD review that I've done was for Threadripper.
Oh yeah, way back.
In 2020, so that was around lockdown time and stuff.
Right.
Before that was the original Ryzen release in 2017. Everything since then has been Intel.
Seems like we're overdue maybe. But I think everybody's aware that we're largely an Intel shop because we're fans. Mm-hmm. And up until fairly recently, Intel on the enthusiast side has been a clear leader.
Yes, exactly. The best memory performance, best overclocking performance. But until recently, you know, we had this massive CPU under a heat spreader and it just creates pointle heat, I guess is what I'm going to call it. So you have this extremely hot spot that goes into a heat spreader that then goes into your heat sink and you can't get the heat away from that fast enough. So you can't really overclock because it overheats itself.
Well, they've been kind of under that reputation for being power hogs as well. So not the most efficient processors.
No, not so much. And I had to look back about why we didn't do more AMD Ryzen stuff. Back with the Ryzen 1, you know, the first release of it, it was the single-threaded performance that really kind of shied me away from the system. While it overclocked, it still didn't overclock as well as the Intel stuff. The memory controller was a little weak, but its power was the fact that they packed as many threads as they could into it to give you that multiprocessor performance. So it was really performance by number.
Scalability.
Instead of like just single, we're going to run this thing as fast as we can.
Well, we've talked a lot about scalability lately, especially when we talk about the AI functionality and the nodes. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious now, I see the box here, to see what this AMD system will do.
Okay, so we should just intro the product really quick. There's a review on Hardware Asylum, by the way, so we'll put a link down in the show notes. But this is the ASUS ROG Crosshair X870E Hero. And this is their flagship motherboard, top of the line for the X870 chipset.
So full disclosure, I did not look at the review, so I'm coming at this fresh for you guys.
Oh, shame on you, Mr. Darren.
So I'm opening the box right now. It's fancy.
We like to do these virtual radio unboxings because that way you can't see what we're doing.
It's got a like a plastic cover that's kind of neat.
Yeah, so these little plastic covers, they've been doing this for a while, and so has Gigabyte. So instead of wrapping the motherboard in a static bag, they put it in a cardboard box and then put a plastic top on it.
Well, it's cool, and it probably saves them some effort.
Well, yeah, and some cost and... You know, the box is only to store it, right? And modern electronics have a lot of grounding built into them, so they aren't as susceptible to electromagnetic damage.
All right, I'm pulling this thing out.
Oh, yeah.
And my first impression is there is a lot of black.
It's a lot of black.
Very black.
There's a lot of weight, too.
It's heavy. It is. Yeah. And, okay, so I'm looking at it. It's branded like black etching, so... Sort of a black and silver. It looks like when you get something laser engraved on black anodized metal.
Oh, yeah. That's a good description right there.
Okay. So, first things first. I see we have two motherboard power slots at the top. Should we work our way around?
Yeah, sure. Let's start at the top. So, at the very, very top, we have two 8-pin CPU power connectors. That's basically 12 volts directly to the VRM for the CPU.
So, you're looking at a pretty hefty power supply.
At the top to the right are a number of fan headers for the AIO and the CPU fans and a chassis fan.
Very nice.
And then we have the, over here is the BIOS codes.
Yeah, for debugging.
And then power, reset, and a key button, which is supposed to allow you to reset the system without resetting your overclock by killing like the memory controller or something like that. It rarely works if your overclock is broken, but it does work if it just kind of casually
but doesn't it boot. Save you time. And I'm always a fan of when you have the buttons on the motherboard. So much easier when you're troubleshooting than messing with the case.
Well, yeah. And for people like me who do a lot of overclocking or bench testing, this is the most convenient way to turn the system on. Otherwise, you're looking for your screwdriver to hit the, the buttons. And the pin headers, they're pretty consistent between the different manufacturers. So if you know where the power switch is, it's pretty easy to touch. But they don't really document those anymore because they're always on this little extension header that plugs into the motherboard and acts as a liaison between your chassis and the board.
Yeah, also a great innovation. Now, this is not one of those motherboards where the power supply and stuff go off the back. So the traditional form factor.
Yeah, so this is traditional. So it has the connections all in the front, which is great. So we go down the right edge of the motherboard, basically below the power switches that are on the board. We have the main power connector.
Right.
We also have an auxiliary 8-pin power connector.
Oh, I just noticed that. Yeah.
And this is going to take a special power supply that has another power connector. So this is basically delivering even more power to the motherboard for stability purposes.
Okay.
We have USB 3.2, and then we have our SATA ports, and then the slim SAS connector. And this is basically an external cable connection that gives you PCI Express bandwidth to another device.
Now, is it intended to be an external device, like the old external PCIe stuff?
Yeah, similar to that. It's kind of like there was a U.2 drive form factor. We had the M.2, mm-hmm. which is the ones we're familiar with for drives and Wi-Fi connectors and stuff like that. This is basically a cable connection to give you PCI Express to something else. So you could plug this into a drive or into a video card or anything like that.
Wow, okay. I haven't seen that in use, but...
Well, it's brand new, and it's something that ASUS put on this flagship motherboard because it's a flagship.
Ooh,
it's
pretty great. So more to come on that.
We have some USB 3.0, which is the wider connector. And then across the bottom, we have a plethora of additional connectors as well.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Including some more USBs. We have fan connectors, and we have the digital ARGB. At the bottom, we have two of the connectors there, and I think there's one at the top. On the I/O shield, we have a lot of connections, and what's great is that they're marked. So Mr. Darren can go and read them off. But basically, we have some BIOS buttons at the top.
Yeah.
And we have a number of USB 4.0s, along with some Type-Cs at the bottom. Two Ethernets, one for 2.5 and one for 10 gigabyte.
Wow.
Wi-Fi 7, which is these two power ports right there. I'm pointing at the I/O shield. Of course, you can see that. And then digital audio. Which is interesting because when I was testing it, I could not run the audio through the Rightmark audio tester, which is something that I've been using for years to go and give me kind of a signal to noise and frequency response test. But when I was plugging the loopback cable into this and tried to run Rightmark, it would not fire up. It basically crashed. Now, if I unplugged the loopback and then fired it up, it worked just fine. So something was off with the way that the audio was working on this particular motherboard. So I kind of dug into it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's actually a USB enabled audio chip.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So on a lot of traditional motherboards, the audio interfaces directly with the chipset. Well, now it's actually a USB connection. So we have a USB audio, which is just like our headphones, our gaming headphones that we use and has basically replaced onboard audio. They're just giving you that option. And of course, you only get a microphone and a headphone jack and then the optical connection.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about this heatsink block. But
That thing that's like shiny and has all your fingerprints on it.
It does pick up fingerprints very quickly. So this looks like a big screen. And I'm assuming that it's a digital display.
That's what I thought as well. And I would like to call it an OLED screen, but I have some pictures on the website, so we're going to go pull those up really quick. It's on the very, very last page. There are a couple of shots of me running this board under my phase, which is another first. I haven't been able to do phase cooling for a really, really long time.
Ooh, let's come back to that. Let's come back to that because I got to know more.
Yeah.
But first.
But if we pull up some of these pictures, basically we have a backlit ROG, which is something that you can kind of see in this little mirrored screen.
Oh, yeah. I do see that.
But then if you look at the other picture, then you'll see all these lines they go across, and they change at a random time. And if you look, they kind of go at an angle, which is interesting to me because you can't really do that if there is just one set of RGB LEDs under that screen.
So this is some sort of trickery, you think, as opposed to a true OLED screen.
Yeah, and it very well could just be a bunch of RGB lights that are under there, and they just happen to be timed to allow for this sort of an effect.
Oh, well, that's still cool on its own front, and it's gigantic.
Yeah, it's huge, and it covers up a massive heatsink that cools the VRM underneath and is connected with this top heatsink via a heat pipe.
Excellent. Now, I notice also right next to it is another relatively large heatsink, and if I'm not mistaken, this is for the M.2 drive.
Yeah, so they
Figured it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh. So ASUS has been adding a lot of convenience features to their motherboards, and the clip that holds this heatsink in place is one of those. So basically, it's just a spring clip. You push on it, yeah, and it pops it out. And you line up the tab with the end of the socket
right on
the board, and just snap it back down, and it locks into place.
I have to also say, it's impressive. It's almost an inch thick, the heatsink, and solid, it looks like.
Yeah, that heatsink is way, way overbuilt.
So, yeah, if you're running your M.2 24/7 or overclocking it or something, you're covered. Oh, and it clicks right back in.
Oh, yeah. It's
you probably heard that. That's cool.
Yeah, that's significant is really what that is.
All right, we got two of the slots here.
Yeah, we have two PCI Express 16-lane slots, but only one of them is wired for 16 lanes. The other one, I think, is only 8 or 4 or something like that. It's not a full video card slot. But that is because in between these two slots is 5 M.2
Holy cow.
Connections.
Under this metal cover. This one, however, does not have a toolless.
So no, we got to get a screwdriver. So one second, we'll come back. Okay, I'm back.
All right. Here.
Yeah, we're getting with all the ambient noises.
Oh, I'm going to take it apart. You have a lot of faith in me.
I do. Well,
these teeth are very small.
Yeah, it's a very, very small set of screws.
Yeah, I think I got one.
I think there's a total of
two.
Four.
Oh, is it these also?
Yeah, those are all connected.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just going to... So what I'm doing is removing the plate that covers basically the whole, what would be the traditional bottom third of the motherboard.
Yeah, where our expansion slots are supposed to be for supporting SLI.
So...
Oh, yeah, and the screws never fully release, which is dumb.
It's always one. All right, I think I got it. Survey says... Okay, so pulling the plate off, which is very nicely etched, also with the ROG symbol, sort of.
And if you look at the back, it's got thermal pads on all four spots.
Very nice. Okay, so there is a one piece that's not removable.
Nope.
Then we get to where all the slots are. Now, these are not toolless, but they do have a nice rubber grommet thing going on here.
Yeah, it's kind of a hold the drive up. But basically, the ones that have thermal pads underneath, and you can see this picture on Hardware Asylum in the review, those are PCI Express Gen 5 slots. And the ones that do not have the thermal pads underneath on the motherboard are PCI Express Gen 4, and they come off the chipset.
Very nice. So you got a lot of storage built in. This is a trend that we've seen developing for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, hard drives will be obsolete except for probably in enterprise solutions.
Well, maybe.
We'll see.
We'll see how that goes.
It's like, well,
we have all this cloud storage. Oh, my God.
Well, and then, of course, those of us that believe in NAS and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. So there's a couple more notable things that we talk about on the board, and then we can start talking about some of the features that are built under the covers.
Okay.
So the notable item here is around the CPU socket, and we have 22 power phases.
Wow.
It's an 18 plus 2 plus 2. Which is a very unique design because we have 18 phases for the CPU. We have two of them for just miscellaneous things. I'm assuming it's probably for the memory controller or something. And then two of them for the SoC, which is different because not every processor has an SoC built in.
One thing I noticed that you haven't talked about, but it's kind of one of my favorite features, is they have these new style clips for the cards, which allow you to, I'm looking, it's called Q Release Slim. Yeah. Which is just one of those little quality of life things that I adore, because it means you do not have to figure out how to push that little clip down when you're trying to remove a video card. You just sort of tilt it.
You rock it out of place.
And it pops out.
Yeah. So what's ingenious about that is the fact that when you are removing a video card, if it's on a test bench, sometimes you can just rock it back and you push the clip back and right. it releases the card. So now they just kind of built it into the little clip. But when it's inside a chassis, you have to get a little stick or whatever to go and push it down to release the card. Otherwise, it doesn't come out.
Oh, yeah. Many's the day I've had a flashlight and a little slim screwdriver trying to get a video card out.
Oh, my God. Those are so, so bad.
Well, I think we've got a pretty good idea of the hardware, except for...
We have one more thing. One more thing.
One more thing.
Which is the NitroPath memory.
What?
Yeah, so
that sounds fancy.
On the two flagship motherboards from Asus, we have a different redesign to the memory sockets. And supposedly they have a patent on this for the next 2 years or something.
NitroPath.
But the socket itself has been redesigned. It has some gold pins in it to make contact with your memory modules.
Fancy.
But they don't have the super long legs. So normally with the way that these pins work, you have connection at the motherboard. And then there's these two wires that go all the way up and they kind of bend in the middle.
Right.
To make contact.
So the slots are deep.
Well, they're the
same. These are not deep.
No, they're the same.
Are they?
The slots are physically the same. It's the pins inside that are different. So instead of having this long wire that goes in the slot, they have redesigned it so that it curls down, reduces the length of the material that's in there, and then they gold plated it.
Man, which, I'd have told you those are shallow, but maybe it's just my imagination.
No, they're the same. The one way you can tell the difference is if you look at this motherboard and then another one side by side, and the memory sockets on the non-ASUS board, you can see the little pieces of silver in the openings.
Oh, okay.
But on this one, you'd be hard-pressed to see those. You have to actually look directly down on top of it.
I see that. Now, you mentioned one more thing, but I think there's another, because this thing is heavy, which we already mentioned, but a large part of that is because it's got a giant, beautiful backplate on it.
Oh, yes, the backplate. I like backplates because they really decorate the motherboard, but they also reinforce it considerably. So that adds a lot of stiffness because you can get more points to basically hold up the PCB. And it allows for you to pull some heat off of the back of the VRM via some thermal pads to make the backplate functional.
It also kind of becomes its own sort of bench stand, right? Because it's keeping all the contacts from touching the surface that you're sitting it on.
True, except that it's not high enough to be able to put a card in there because of the expansion slot cover. It's just too it's too long.
Well, maybe a future development.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just put it on the edge of a board or something like that, and you're good to go.
All right. Well, let me reassemble this, and while we do, we can talk a little bit about some of the things that we can't see.
Okay. So the first one I will bring up is in the UEFI, or the BIOS. And, of course, ROG, Republic of Gamers, ASUS, they have a pretty robust BIOS system. They have the easy mode and advanced mode. Easy mode is pretty great because it's kind of like a little dashboard that you can make certain changes to. And then if you dive into the advanced version, that's where you get all the different menus. It's kind of amazing to see how things, expand. And we have some screws going in right here.
Yeah, I'm reassembling it like I'm working at the factory.
But we might have, for instance, being able to set the XMP profile on memory.
Okay, yeah.
That's pretty easy. That's just a little drop down. But then if you go into the advanced memory settings, then you can change like timing SKUs, and it expands to the point where you may not know exactly what this feature does, but it's in there because somebody wanted it, which is pretty great, because while I may not use those features, it's nice to have them available so that other people can mess with them if they want.
Well, I feel like BIOS has become one of those things where over the years, if you don't keep up on it, you just kind of go with the automatic settings because they become so in-depth now.
Yeah, and speaking of automatic settings, in the BIOS, you have an AI overclocking feature.
Nice.
So there are some, basically some predefined profiles built into the BIOS for just running any processor off the market. You can enable the AI overclocking, which will then look at the performance of your cooler and measure that against your processor, and then automatically make certain tweaks in the system to give you more performance.
That sounds awesome.
And on top of that, if that wasn't enough.
Oh no, sell me more.
ASUS was really proud of the fact that they have 8 points of articulation in the fan curves. So you can set your fan profiles with all of these different points up to 8 now, instead of like 3 or 4, which is what most motherboards do.
There's got to be somebody out there that's going to take advantage of that and really fine tune their fans.
Yeah. Now, of course, when I do overclocking, I kind of get in there and I just manually set things. And the default way of overclocking this board is to use the AI, or you can lock all the cores to the same frequency. And of course, if you use the AI portion of it, then it's going to scale with the fastest cores. It might scale those a little bit faster. It might get a couple more that will go a little bit faster. So you'll have a much higher single threaded performance, where my option is it generates a lot more heat in the processor, but it makes the entire package much faster because it's clocking every core much faster.
Wow.
But the part that sucks is the fact that if you look in CPU-Z, my Ryzen 9 was running at 5.7 gigahertz, right?
Okay, it's great.
But when I put this board under my single stage phase and tried to run all the cores at 5.7 gigahertz, it killed the phase. It was too much heat.
Wow, that's a first.
Well, not really a first, because that's a problem with these multi-core processors, that they generate so much heat, they can't actively get it away from the CPU, and any cooling you have, short of LN2, is not quite enough. So my phase couldn't keep it cold enough. It would run at 5.7, but I had to back it down to 5.5 gigahertz to get anything really to complete, because some of my benchmarks go for quite a while. So while the some of the benchmarks that you'll see, for instance, the gaming benchmark, they work best for single or dual cores, because okay, it's a fairly old game. So I can overclock my processor and make it much, much faster, but then that particular benchmark is slower because I slowed down the base clock from 5.7 to 5.5. It's a little weird how this works out, but if you look at other benchmarks, then all of a sudden it's a lot faster.
Interesting. Okay. Well, speaking of which, should we take a look at the benchmarks?
Sure. Let's take a look.
All right. Because I'm really curious how well this competes with the Intel processors.
Okay. So I basically, well, to that point, we have the ROG Crosshair against the 14900K.
That's a big proc.
Which is on the RS Z790 Elite. Now we have in our Sandra benchmark CPU, the Drystone is almost at 1,000.
Oh my gosh.
Whereas at the Z790 is 830.
There you go. That's so a big jump.
The Ryzen is considerably faster in this particular benchmark. And then if we go down to the multimedia, it's completely off the charts. So we have the Integer performance at 9,580, whereas with the Z790, it's at 3,000.
So more than three times the speed. Wow, that's the big multi-core advantage right there.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we go down to memory bandwidth, this is the one that will really dictate real performance, because while you have a lot of cores and you can process a lot of chunks, the ability to get data in and out of your processor, that's the most important feature. And this is where our Ryzen CPU is the slowest. So we only have 48 gigabytes per second, whereas with the Z790 and even the Z690, we are at 68 gigabits per second and 56.
So now, from a real world standpoint there, can you overcome that with faster memory and memory overclocking?
Well, you can actually overcome that by enabling the XMP profile.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So that's one thing, when I test the default system, it's basically you take the board out, you put it on the bench, and you just run it. So there's really no optimizations that have been put in there. Now, if we go into the overclocking performance, and these are all the synthetic benchmarks for the most part, this is where I enabled the profile, and then we also overclocked the processor to 5.5 gigahertz. And if we look at our CPU performance, it went from 1,000 up to 1,120.
Okay, so a small bump.
Small bump because we actually slowed the clock speed down, but we added more cores. But it wasn't enough to actually overcome a everything for this book. we get down to multimedia and it basically jumps from 9,580 to 11,000.
That's bigger.
That's okay. Quite a bit. And then this is the one that you're most interested in, which is the memory performance. It goes from 48 up to 63, which then matches the Intel. But we have to remember that the Intel was also at the default setting, so there was no profile enabled.
So the Intel could probably run even faster on the XMP, but at least we got an impressive jump there.
Yeah. Now, here's the Unreal Tournament 3. This is the one gaming benchmark I use because it's really a CPU benchmark at this point, but it does a lot with memory interaction. And we have, I love this actually, 1,107 frames per second at the default speed at 5 point, you know, just by running it.
Right.
Under overclock conditions, it's at 1,064 frames per second. So it actually got slower. And this is where I was talking about how the clock speed dropped down.
Oh, right, right.
And it's only used in a couple of cores because it's an older game. Now, if you go to Cinebench, this is a multi-core, multi-threaded benchmark. Default was 15,986 for the default, and it jumps to 18,992 under overclock conditions.
That's respectable.
I was trying really, really hard to break 19, but I could not get that to work with the phase. It kept collapsing. Basically, it would run for a little bit, and then it got to the point where everything got too hot, and then the phase couldn't keep up, and the system crashed.
Well, it looks like some pretty impressive numbers, and better overclocking than I would have expected from an AMD processor, I'm not going to lie.
Well, yeah. Well, and also I was putting in that under the phase, which is an extreme overclocking method. Under air, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere close to these numbers.
Well, let me ask you then, from a enthusiast perspective, or even from an overclocking perspective, maybe, is this processor and this motherboard a viable alternative to an Intel system?
Yes.
How so?
It is out of box. The performance is a lot better. Now, of course, I am using the Ryzen 9, which is the latest and greatest CPU that came out. It's also the fastest one that they produce within the AM5 package. So I'm basing this off of the fact that I also have an extremely fast processor. But I also like the features that are on this motherboard. The SlimSAS, that's a new feature. Obviously, I'm not going to use it out of the box, but I like the idea that I have it. I also like the idea that I have 5 M.2 slots. I'll probably only use one of them, but I have options available, which is pretty great.
Right.
Something I'm not going to use right away is probably the USB 4.0, just because there's not a lot of devices out there, but the fact that it supports it means that our USB 3 devices will probably run a lot faster, which is pretty great. The memory support, we don't have high-speed memory support like what we have on the Intel side of things, but the fact that I can put in a generic set of like 6400 megatransfers a second DDR5 and run it at the advertised speed and get some really good performance out of it is really, really great. And also, ASUS has some profiles that are built in that you can tweak the memory to run beyond some of those predefined speeds.
Nice.
So it all depends on if they have tested the modules for and what kind of chips are on the module. So certain overclocking modules will run faster than the advertised speed just because the board supports it and knows how to implement that. Which, from an overclocking standpoint, memory is really where it's at because the CPUs kind of have this limited headroom due to the fact that integrated heat spreader, these pointal CPU cores that are getting hotter and smaller, and the fact that if we want to really get any decent performance, we'll have to use like an AIO or a phase or something extreme to push it to the limit.
Well, I like the out-of-box performance. I think that is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Design-wise, I like it too. I mean,
it's a great-looking board.
Yeah, we don't talk about the backplates as much as we should just because, you know, they're backplates. We all motherboards should have them in a certain way. But the fact that there's so many design elements that make the board kind of come together, something that we don't really see very often. And sometimes they're even mismatched. Like we'll have a VRM design that doesn't match the heatsink that goes over the M.2. In the case of the ROG board, everything just goes together nicely.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com.
Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or follow us on Twitter. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2024. Thanks for listening.